So I flew for about 2.5 hours this morning, and I was shocked as to how many people on a Wednesday in the middle of September were out and about, like, flying around. It's not a holiday. Like, people don't take today off. But there was a shit ton of people out today.
So you're saying people are deliberately flying because it's 9/11?
Yeah, I mean, like a show of solidarity or something. Like, we will not be intimidated, motherfucker. Or something.
It's been 18 fucking years. Jesus Christ.
We do not negotiate.
I heard a great joke the other day. I don't know if I told you guys this. Is that we are now at the point where there will be kids who grow up in elementary school, and they think that the reason why you dial 911 for an emergency is because of 9/11.
No, oh, but you know it's the case, though.
Right. Well, I mean, you know the stupid things that, like, elementary schoolers
pee. I know.
And so, yeah, it's totally going to be a thing now.
All right.
Well,
do you guys
start for real?
Oh, man, but they missed all of our 9/11 talk.
And our Antonio Brown is a rapist talk.
Rape and 9/11.
Yeah, well, unfortunately. Listen, we missed a lot of Ian's talk during that as well. So
do you if Antonio Brown was put in a position to hijack a plane?
I think that Antonio Brown totally could hijack a plane, but only if it was a young female pilot that he could rape in the cockpit. And then because then he could crash the plane afterwards, because he would have only been able to subdue her because she's female.
So what you're saying is that he would never commit rape on an Airbus A380 because it looks like a beluga whale.
Jesus Christ.
All right. You guys.
This anaconda.
Plane jokes!
This anaconda. Don't.
Welcome back.
This anaconda don't want none unless you've got buns, hun.
Welcome back to another episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I am the host, unfortunately, tonight, Richard Martindale. And with me, as always, is Flight Captain Patrick Weaver.
Ah, demoted!
And Officer Ian Shaw.
Hello!
Guys, wow. It's been like 2 months, I feel like, since we've actually all gotten together to do a podcast.
Well, here's the real question. Is the last podcast that we did, has it been posted?
Yes, it has.
Oh, okay.
That was the anime, season half anime episode.
Oh. Wait, so half. I wasn't part of that. So how long has it been since I've been on a podcast?
Like 2 months, like I said. It's been quite a while.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, this is not a scale of 1 to 10 thing. How upset would you be if I ate popcorn while we did the podcast?
An 11, because it's 9/11.
Okay. Can you do it quietly?
I mean, maybe, but
you,
I
motherfucker.
I'll do it loudly just to annoy you.
Do I need to switch you to push to talk?
Oh man, I'll push to talk you. Push to your baby. Talk. I'll do something. What is in here?
Oh.
Okay. All right. What are we talking about today, good old host?
Oh, man, guys. We've got notes. Patrick.
Month-old notes.
I know. Ian.
Yes.
I hear you got a house.
Oh, yeah.
A while ago now.
Yeah, I'm in it now. I'm sitting
there. How's your move going? Is anything still in boxes?
The office and my game room and some random boxes here and there have not been unpacked, but I'd say...
Wait. How many of those Funko Pops do you have opened in your game room?
Zero so far.
What?
Well, the game room has been kind of low on the priority compared to, like, the functional items in the house, so...
Okay.
I would say that the house is probably 70% unpacked at this point.
Okay. That's not bad, then.
No, it's pretty good.
When did you guys actually move in? What was the official, like, move-in date for you guys?
What's today? Wednesday?
Today's Wednesday. 9/11.
What? Has it been that long already? We moved in on August 31st.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel that long, but yeah, I guess so. But yeah, it's home ownership is both incredibly rewarding and terrifying, as everyone says. It's pretty much exactly like everybody says. Like, it's like, it's super great because apartment living sucks. But at the same time, you're like constantly paranoid that something is going to go wrong and then you're going to be financially liable for it. So
has anything gone wrong with you yet?
Yes. The water softener needs to be replaced, which is not the biggest problem that you could have.
Are you going to buy Vila that shit?
We're gonna do the rental option for a little bit and then pay for it outright. But then at least they let you like pay like essentially to rent a water softener, and then like the money that you're paying into renting it pays down what would be the final cost of it. And so like at any time you could just buy it outright for whatever the remaining cost is.
So it's rent to own.
Essentially. But like we were like, oh my God, like we've got all this, like we're understandably a little strapped right now after the buying of the house. So it's like, we really don't want to drop like $1,000 on a water softener right now. Let's like push that off for a couple months. So, and like, we've got a plumber coming in on Friday to fix an issue with the toilet. And we've got, what else? I feel like there's something else. We got a couch being delivered tomorrow. We had an electrician coming next week for something, but then we fixed it. Susan actually fixed it. Like there was a thunderstorm and then a bunch of our outlets didn't work and I couldn't like the breaker didn't reset it and I couldn't find a GCFI, but then Susan found it and she reset it and it was fine. So,
and it was K.
So anyway, like the moral of the story is home ownership is great except for when it's not. Yes.
Well, that just sounds peachy.
Peachy, Ian.
I could not be more interested in going to Aaron's and renting to own a water softener.
Hey, I'm
where we are in
life. I am right sitting now in a banging dining room at a banging dining room table that I put together myself, and there's nothing more rewarding than that.
All right. Real talk. And you brought this up. I did not bring this up. So you've been in the house for 11-ish days now.
Ish, yeah.
How many rooms have you banged in?
Only one.
Is that the usual one?
The usual one.
Is it the bedroom?
Yes, it is the bedroom. We have not banged in the other rooms yet.
Am I right?
Well, so here's the thing about Susan. Susan is like, she is very focused on the thing that is most stressful at the time. And like, so...
Are we like, still talking about you guys banging?
Yes, I was going to say, where's this going?
So like,
what part of this is the stressful part?
It's hard, it's hard to get her to do fun things while there's work to be done. So like until we were a certain level of unpacked, there wasn't banging to be had.
Oh, okay. I was still going down the innuendo road of...
No.
She finds it hard to focus when there's things to be done.
No. Susan's very uncomfortable in a packed up house. Like, she wants, like, the shit to be done. And so it's hard to get her to be like, hey, let's go fuck. Like, let's take a break to fuck. When she's like, no, the shit to do. So, but now that we are an appropriate level of unpacked, she has eased off of that, so...
The part that all of our listeners have to understand about this is, and that just kind of rolls off of our backs at this point, is that is literally how Susan does foreplay. She like walks into a room and goes, "Hey, Ian, let's go fuck." It completely blows Brooke's mind. When I the first time I told Brooke that story, she's like, "You're joking." I'm like, "No. It's how she is. She's like a piece of sandpaper or something."
So.
It's like that episode in 30 Rock where Liz just starts getting turned on because she's organizing everything, and she's like, oh, we're going to need multiple highlighter colors. Oh, baby!
I mean, the thing is, though, is that's not, like, super off the mark. Like, with Susan, like, if I go and...
Oh, my gosh.
If I go and do, like... If I took it upon myself to, like, clean and organize the kitchen or something, like, she would be like, that would turn her on more than if I went to the gym and bench pressed, like, 250 pounds. So...
Oh yeah, it's a symbol of getting old, because I'll give you a real life story right now. Like I made the bed a week ago for like the first time in forever, and that turned Brooke on so much that we had sex right there.
But then you unmade the bed then.
Well, then I got to make it again. So yeah. brownie points.
It's an endless cycle. Mm-hmm.
But yes, Susan has been known to, like, in fact, today, as a matter of fact, I think I do believe that the verbiage that preceded us boning before she left for her mom's was like, are we gonna do sexy time before I leave?
Very nice. And that's when Ian looks at her and goes, but aren't you going to go and invite Joe? And she'll be like, Joe who? And then Ian goes, Joe mama, with finger guns.
Oh my God.
And we'll always remember where we were when Ian gets divorced.
Jesus.
All right, guys.
Anyway.
Patrick, anything new with you? Before we dive into our real meaty subjects.
Still flying.
Yeah, how's that going?
Going pretty good. I had my vacation, so.
Yeah, I know. That's why this podcast. No, I'm kidding.
Right. Yeah, so I. Prior to today, I hadn't flown in just over 3 weeks, and which is way too long. But my wife really wanted a vacation, so we did a 3,200-mile odyssey with the dog.
Oof.
And went up to Brooke's parents' lake house in upstate New York. That was a lot of fun. Dog had a lot of fun. And I made a nice road trip out of it because I was like, I'm not driving 20 hours in each direction without stopping and doing cheesy stuff. So we stopped at as many of those like cheesy places along the way that we could find, like the world's largest cedar bucket.
Oh, you guys go to those things. Okay.
Hell yeah. Well, I mean,
they're called, like, tourist traps.
What other time would you be able to do that? Like, you know, you go, you're driving for work.
Never, you never. Get... You let them rot and go out of business like a good American.
Nah. Good Americans stop and take cheesy photos of them. Oh, I have photos with holding up my dog next to a naked lady statue. What else we have? We have Indian statues, concrete Indian statues. What was another one? There's another really good one. Whatever. Anyway, so it was a good time. Good time.
Well, cool.
And then, I'm almost done with my private license. After today, I'm at 40 hours, and I only have like one or two more requirements. And so hopefully by the end of September, I'll be all done and be a licensed pilot.
Sweet. What is the next step after that? What are your plans in terms of what you want to do with that?
So training wise, you have to. Your next step would be to get your instrument rating, which means you can fly in the clouds and stuff, and in otherwise non visibility situations. And then from there, you'd get your commercial rating and usually your multi engine rating, and you can then go and either become an instructor or do a number of other things. Where you do that is kind of where we're still trying to make a decision, whether I'm going to go away to school and do that kind of all at once, or I'm going to still hang out here and still do stuff with my current instructor. So we're still trying to make that decision. But as far as like what I'm able to do with a private license is, I mean, I can fly around pretty much any single engine plane.
Sweet.
And I can like fly you guys around and stuff, but I can't.
Oh, do anything. Man.
I can't do anything for money.
That's what I've been waiting for.
Under contract.
No. You can't say it aloud. And if the FAA is listening, he didn't say that. So the idea is that, like, for example, if I take Richard on a flight or whatever, like, I'm not allowed to be compensated, but Richard's allowed to pay like a share of the cost of the flight. So like, say it's $100 for the gas, like he could throw in $50 and that would be his share or something.
And tip you.
Right.
I'd pitch in for gas. That sounds fair.
Right. But like, I can't be like, hey guys, like you want to fly to Dallas? Like give me $100 and I'll fly you to Dallas. Like, no, you can't do that. That's very illegal.
Wink, wink. Winky blinky.
Oh, anyway, that's where we're at with that.
Yay, awesome. Progress is being made. I'm excited for you.
I know, it's really great. I'm doing my and tomorrow on 9/12 for those who are listening.
The danger will have passed.
Yeah, right, the danger will have passed. is that I'm going to be doing my long cross country. So
that's what I'm excited for.
160 miles total, I think, is what I planned. And I actually still need to do the flight planning. So once we get done with the podcast, that's what I'm going to do.
Dude, awesome. I'm super jealous.
Jelly.
Super jelly. All right, guys. We want to just get into it.
Yeah.
Well, what are you up to? We talked about Ian and
jeez. What am I up to? I'm falling apart, guys. I've got my wrist.
Jesus.
I'm wearing, so let me tell you what my nightly wardrobe consists of. I have a wrist brace on my right hand. I have a boot on my left foot.
What the fuck?
Because I still have plantar fasciitis for some stupid reason. Apparently it takes like up to 6 months to get rid of this thing. And I sprained my wrist at work because, well, I walk a lot of dogs and none of them are leash trained. And I like to kind of tie the leash near around on the other side of my thumb to try to like give it a little bit more anchor so they can't slip it out my hand. The problem is that puts like a lot of pressure on my wrist. And I thought it was nothing, and then the next day, every time I bent it the wrong way, it would like, or not, you know what, not the wrong way, just every time I bent it, it would like shoot up with pain. So now I'm wearing a brace, and at night I have to wear a boot for my foot, and it's just the most like, I've been 30 years old for barely a month. And I feel like I'm being held together by braces.
Man, you need a better story than the one you just told
us. I know.
like, oh, it's because I walked dogs and they were so aggressive on my gentle joints. Like, oh, Jesus Christ, Richard. Bar fight!
No, I haven't.
Richard doesn't go to bars anymore.
Bear fight, then.
Unless they're board game bars.
Oh, boy. That does sound fun, though.
There was one in Canada. They served amazing milkshakes, and they had it was like split in half. You had milkshakes and popcorn on one side, and then booze on the other. And they had this thing where if you would like roll a dice, and if you got a 20 on the D20, you get a free drink.
Oh man, I want to go here.
That's pretty smart.
But if it hit any of the other numbers, you had to have that. That was the drink that you were going to order.
Ooh, so dangerous.
It was like a 1 through 20, and so they had a list of other things, and you're like, well, I don't know what I want to get like to drink tonight. Well, you roll the dice, and then that's going to be your drink. It was really, really cool. Very smart.
I want to review the last statement here, and I hope that Richard puts some nice sound effects into this.
God, I don't know if I'm not prepared.
So you know that you're 30 years old and you've reached a certain stage of your life when you start talking about going out to bars and you're like, oh man, I found the best milk, or I found the best board game bar and they serve milkshakes. Oh my God.
You're like dad from Modern Family.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm proud of that because milkshakes are delicious.
Of course they're delicious. It's just when you're 20 or 21 or whatever, you're all about the shots.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody!
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guys.
Awkward pause.
Yeah, a bit.
Richard, you really need to play this thing a little better. Come on.
Okay, do you guys want to talk about how your fantasy baseball leagues,
yes!
Baseball teams have ended?
Let us talk about this. This is all interesting.
Right. Time to go into sports time.
Oh, man. I have a lot of
things. Well, in the beginning, we had this ready as show notes for a couple of weeks ago. I have now crossed off playoffs because some of us are not in playoffs.
No, I want to talk about the playoffs, though.
Ian, how's your playoffs going?
I'm not knocked out, so that's a good thing. But I have I have now lost off of my team Joey Gallo, Jose Ramirez, Javier Baez, Starling Marte. Thank God I got Springer back, because fuck. So,
aren't you playing Heller?
I am playing Heller, and it looks like unless something catastrophic happens, I do believe that I am in a good position to win. You know, it's still possible I could lose, but I feel like I have a pretty good hold on it. The other one, the Mark TK matchup, is anyone's game still. Like, they're tied at 6-6. So that one could go any which way to Sunday. Although I think that Mark has an advantage based on what I'm looking at here. So, but anyway, so yeah, this is definitely a year that I felt like everything went right for my team.
Surprisingly so, considering that you have no business, that after last year, you have no business being in
the position you've been in. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to that. But the whole thing is, like, I drafted well. Keepers were pretty much all hit. They all were hits. I drafted well. It's actually interesting because, and this I guess think is going to probably tie into a larger discussion we can have, but my draft strategy was to ignore starting pitching and go full reliever. And what ended up happening is I now have 6 starting pitchers on my team. Justin Verlander, Aaron Nola, Shane Bieber, Mike Minor, Caleb Smith, and Zach Gallen, which is decidedly not a relievers-only strategy.
Prager.
Now, well, here's the thing, is that the reliever-only strategy did not work, but I inadvertently took a good strategy, which was to correctly ignore starting pitching, because starting pitching has been dog shit this year.
It's not been great.
Yeah. So, like, I pretty much just dominated hitting, and then everyone's pitching sucked. So I still won enough pitching categories to be fine and then traded for some reliable pitchers later. But honestly, if I don't win this year, I'm just going to chalk it up to, like, variance got me. Because in my mind and in my heart, I did win this year. I felt like that I could not have done any better. I think you can nitpick it all you like and, like, yeah, sure, I could have been a little earlier on some of the free agents and whatnot, but, like, this is a best case scenario kind of team. So, but I think that, like, I'm interested to see what you guys think about how fantasy is going forward, considering that we now live in the juiced ball era and home runs are way up, and we're going to have like a dozen people hit over 40 home runs this year. And like, we've got like something over, like already over 30 batters have hit 30 homers this year. It's pretty nuts, but, and like pitching is terrible now. Like there's only like 10 reliable starters and then everyone else is dog shit. So I think, I don't know what you guys think about that and like how this plays into how you're approaching next season and your keepers and everything. But I think for me, it's like pretty much made it so that I'm like, well, maybe I just don't focus on pitcher at all. Like maybe I keep like one ace and then just piece it together. Cause like I was still able to piece together a pretty good squad, like pitching wise, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, Pat, you want to go first?
So I have a lot of thoughts. First and foremost, I would like to say that I made a terrible error this year. I got a little unlucky especially with injuries, and you could argue that my season ended whenever Tatis got a back spasm and then suddenly was out for the year the very next day. But because of how the rest of the season played out, I only ended the year like a game and a half out of fourth. And if I didn't blow up my team the way that I did, I really feel like I would have become competitive, because Jack Flaherty became like Nolan Ryan in the second half of the...
Oh, yeah. Jack Flaherty's been nuts.
And now Glasnow's back. But anyway, like...
Pitching in relief, though.
I feel like I really made a blunder in blowing up my team the way that I did.
Your whole thing, your whole reason for blowing up the team is that you said that it didn't matter because like you didn't believe that your team was good enough to take me or Mark down even if you made the playoffs. I thought that was your whole thing.
I remember this argument as well.
That was the whole thing, but then I think your team has gotten weaker as the year's gone on.
I think that's fair. Partially because of injuries, but...
Right, and then now, like, your entire team is injured, and then Christian Yelich just blew his kneecap away. So things are all coming up Patrick, if I still had my complete team, but I don't. So that's my first thought. Second thought is, I almost feel that next year, it's like the opposite of what you said, Ian, in a lot of ways. Because if we're saying that we're now in the juice ball era, so that we're going to see more and more home runs, or at least a consistent level of high home runs, therefore high offense, and everybody in fantasy knows, at least in head-to-head, that home runs equal fantasy relevance, then, I mean, that just means that it's going to be easier to piece together a competent hitting team. Like, it's not like you're scrambling around to get that one guy who hits 50 home runs. You now have a chance at a dozen guys who hit 50 home runs. I think it's going to be much more lucrative to have a strong pitching, especially starting pitching squad, and then piece together your hitting. And that's
I strongly disagree.
Well,
because the juice ball, because the juice ball era has made pitchers that we would have expected to be reliable going into this year not reliable. Like, that's the whole thing, is that pitching was already a difficult position to draft for, because you never know when a pitcher's just going to all of a sudden shit the bed, aside from, like, you know, your top five, you know, your Verlander, your Garrett Cole, your Scherzer, like, those guys are, you know, your money in the bank. But after them, it's just, it's the freaking Wild West. Like, my second best pitcher is Shane Bieber. My third best is Aaron Nola, and he's been terrible the last two starts. The rest of my guys are just like a piece together bunch of nothings who might hit and might not week to week. So if you decide to like, oh yes, I agree, you can piece together a serviceable hitting squad out of pretty much anything just because everyone's hitting 30 homers this year. But if you miss, if you decide to, like, if you're saying, okay, I'll wait on certain hitters because you can just get power, like, it's nobody's business anyway, and I'll spend early round picks on these pitchers, and then they shit the bed, you're fucked, because you're going to be at best league average in hitting at best, and then your pitching is just going to be terrible. And it's just like, you're wasting rounds. Like, I spent almost every one of my picks in the first 10 rounds of the draft on hitters, and I just blew everyone away in the hitting categories every week, because that's more predictive. Like, your hitter's past performance is way more predictive of their future success, even in the juice ball era, than the pitchers are.
All I'm saying is that, at least for my strategy in the past, is that if I say Justin Verlander, because I've had Justin Verlander and you have him now. Like, if I'm keeping Justin Verlander, then I'm not even considering, let's say, drafting Max Scherzer in the first round. Okay. But with the way that things are now, I would highly consider that. Like, I really would, because that way you're, like, you would have Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer on your team, and then you'd be able to piece together your hitting afterwards. Like, I would not.
But they're also both like 37.
Well, whatever.
At what point do they fall apart?
Hey,
I get
Justin Verlander has found the fountain of youth. I think he'll be fine.
Don't nitpick the names. Like, the idea is,
I get it. I get it. Could be Cole. Insert whoever.
Right. Yeah. Like, would you choose Cody Bellinger over Garrett Cole if you already had Justin Verlander?
Yeah, I would, because they're just. All right, let's do an experiment. Keep talking. Richard, add your 2 cents, because I want to look something up real quick.
All right, so, I mean, I kind of fall in the camp with Ian, but the thing is, like, my strategy next year is probably going to be something a little bit similar to Patrick, because of the fact that I think Ian is right. Like, I kind of want to keep throwing darts into as many pitchers as I can next year and stack in, because I know that hitting, like Patrick said, you're pretty much going to get a good hitter now, because all these hitters with their home runs are just, like, really starting, like, guys who have no business, like, maybe 4 years ago are hitting 30 home runs now. And you can look at it in two different ways. One is either that's no longer good enough and you've got to look for the more elite guys, or you could try to keep finding the better pitchers, because, man, this year was so weird that, like, at a certain point, maybe if I can, like, throw enough darts, I can get at least one or two guys that will either be my ace or will end up becoming the ace. And I'd rather take that kind of a chance than and then piece together my hitting as the year goes on, because it clearly seems the easier route is to get hitters as the year kind of progresses than it is to man like to dumpster dive and find those hidden gems. So that's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, I mean, like, I just don't think it's too much of a comparison. Like, I get the idea that once you get away from the top three or top five pitchers, then it becomes a bit more difficult. But I mean, you can't make an argument that, like, oh, I'm going to spend my number six pick on Cody Bellinger when, like, five rounds later you can get Gleyber Torres, who has 36 home runs.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Is anyone else getting, like, popping with your audio?
No. Nah, I'm good.
Okay, well, it's just me then. I don't know why that is. Anyway, continue.
Is it? Yeah. Oh, now I hear popping. But it was from you, Ian.
Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm just kind of going anecdotally off of what I've observed this season. And, like, I didn't, like, the thing is, like, I didn't have any starting pitchers, except my two starting pitchers that I drafted, and it was just because I literally had no one else to draft in those spots, were Shane Bieber and Nick Pavetta. That was it. So, like, this was literally a season where I was like, no starting pitchers at all. I'm going to make do without. And then, like, I had the second best record in the league at the end of the season. So, and it was purely off of just slugging the shit out of people because my hitting was better every single week. And then, like, I just pieced together starting pitching off the waiver wire when it looked like the reliever thing wasn't probably going to work out for the best. And then, so I just think it's unnecessary to go. I think you just, it's so much more predictive. You know what you're going to have if you just, like, go whole hog on hitters and just, like, really fill your hitters out. And that's just, I don't know. I get what you're saying, but I think it's way, way more risky.
I mean, there's going to be risk no matter what.
That's the cop-out statement. I'm saying that it's there's inherently more risk in valuing pitchers, at the beginning of this season, because just so many of them have been false gold because of it hasn't been maybe the top 10 pitchers that have been affected as much, but basically after your top 10 pitchers, that spot between like number 10 and number like 30 has just been a wasteland where it used to be that you're, you know, 10 to 20, 20 to 30 ranked starting pitchers were still quality starting pitchers. And now it's just not the case. Everyone's ERAs are so inflated and everything because it's just the juice ball.
Yeah. I think we'll have to agree to disagree on this. Like, I feel like you're, in my opinion, you're conflating two seasons essentially on your team, because your hitting is a lot worse now than it was. And the reason is because you traded away some really good hitters to get these pitchers.
I mean, you know? I don't think it's hard to really say if that was the reason that my hitting is worse, because I lost four hitters to injury. So, like, is it, I think it's a little column A, little column B, because
right.
Like, yeah, Bellinger and what's his face, Ketel Marte were, like, you know, really valuable pieces, but at the same token, you know, losing four hitters to injury also sucks. So, especially four really productive hitters to injury. So, it's, at the end of the day, I don't know that my trades were the thing that, like, made my hitting worse. Especially since, like, I think the Ketel Marte and Gleyber Torres was essentially a wash.
Well, I mean, Ketel Marte is the sixth best hitter overall right now in fantasy.
I mean, yes, but...
And Torres is not in the top 25.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that... Because Marte has cooled off a little bit, so...
But, yeah, so, well, and it's just, it's really hard to have these discussions anyway, because, like, the fantasy baseball season has so many nuances that it's like, you know, you could do the same strategy next year. You could hit on the same guys, and then because of one or two variances, like, you don't even make the playoffs, you know? So, It can be difficult.
At the end of the day, I just looked to confirm that I am number one in every hitting category except for runs, in which case I am second by 2 runs. So, like, yes, my hitting is worse than it was when the season started, but if this were a roto league, you all would be licking my boots right now, so.
I do like licking your boots.
In fact, I am first in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of the 12 categories. I am in first place. Yeah, I will fucking do it.
Yeah, and so the only pitching stats that you're not in first place in...
Strikeouts and wins, as expected. And wins.
Right, and you're in, what, last in...
I am in second to last in wins. I am in fifth to last in strikeouts. Yeah, I'm in seventh in strikeouts.
Right, so, like... We're arguing the same point. It's just that you think that your hitting has done you better, and I think your pitching has. And, like, but that's the thing, is that, like, how many pitchers are there that can give you the best ERA, whip, KBB, and save holds in the league? And the list is very small. But how many hitters are available that can win you home runs? The list is really big. So do you think it's more of a risk to try and get people out of the really small list or try to get people out of the really big list?
Yeah, but they're not equal, because you know as well as I do that pitchers, like, you have a bigger chance to miss on a pitcher because either they're more likely to get injured, they're more likely to just suck for no reason or whatever, than you are to miss on a perennially good hitter.
Pitchers that I choose do not suck for no reason. They suck for very good reason.
Agreed.
All right.
And well, it's mainly because Antonio Brown's sitting in front of him.
Oh, my God. I think we beat this to death, Richard. Move us along.
All right. Ian, well, let's segue, I guess, a little bit more with baseball stuff. Ian, I just recently got kicked out of my playoffs. And
oh, I'm sorry.
The writing was on the wall. To be fair, the writing was on the wall. But what I would like to blame it on is the goddamn blown save category. Because I was winning that all the way up until Saturday night. And then all of a sudden, two of my relief pitchers, who have no business being in the closer role, found themselves in save situations, and they both decided to stand up together, do a quick Google search, realize they were on my team, and both blow at the same time. And the other guy had no blown saves. No, actually, sorry, strike that. He had one blown save. And suddenly I had two, and that never changed the rest of the weekend. And while it was going to be a close matchup, it really came down to that stat, where, like, all of a sudden it flipped from me being, like, tied and winning a category to me suddenly being tied and losing a category. And then it was just fucking hell, man. Yeah. Like, I really hate negative stats, and I don't understand the reasoning that they had. Like, so this is a normal matchup, 12-team mixed league, and we have, for some reason, in addition to the normal stats, we have on-base plus slugging percentage, as you would like to do. We also have holds for the pitching stat, but then they decide to put strikeouts as a negative for hitting and blown saves for a negative on the pitching. Now, you can make a decent argument for the strikeouts. It's just the way strikeouts work. I'm just not a fan of them. But, like, the idea is at least sound. It's, hey, we want to penalize people like you, Ian, stacking up a bunch of Joey Gallo-like players and dragging all these stats along with your slugging and your home runs. I get that. I understand that there's a problem. I just don't think strikeouts are the best solution, but I can at least get behind the reasoning of that. Blow saves is such a stupid stat because, one, saves are already so fickle. Two, like, you're already getting a negative. You didn't get the save. That's the negative. You didn't get a save. Why would you double negative yourself for a counting stat? And, like, it's so... Like, it reminds me of when we had, what is it, shutouts? SOs or whatever?
Yeah, we had shutouts.
And the reasoning behind that was very, like, highbrow, like, noble, of like, well, you know, it would be silly not to award somebody this achievement. Which was, you know, that sounds right. But It just didn't happen that often. And so when somebody did a shutout, you're like, well, that's that for the week.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's similar with blowing a save, although if you go with really bad closers, basically it just penalizes, like, when you're scraping the bottom of the barrel for closers, just give up. Don't scrape that bottom. Because, like, getting a, now you're risking not getting that many saves, and you're now risking getting a blown save on top of that. So, like, my strategy this year had been to not draft a single closer, and just go all in on holds, since they made that its own separate category. And I would find myself at random times, because you can't predict these things, that my holds guys would be in closing situations occasionally. And sure enough, on the playoffs, it happened again at the worst possible time to a guy who I'm 95% sure has not checked his team in 2 months. Oh, God.
Sounds perfect.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir, Richard. Like, I don't like negative stats. I don't believe Patrick likes negative stats. Like, I don't know why you were in this league. It's stupid. You should quit.
I have good reasons for liking strikeouts. Yeah, Patrick, tell me your reason for liking strikeouts apart from, or in addition to what I've said, I guess.
So I feel that that for pitchers, the positive stat of a strikeout is equivalent to, for hitters, the positive stat of a home run. Because you get a strikeout, and that strikeout, in turn, lowers your ERA, your whip, and raises your K to walk just by doing that one action. Home runs for hitters, as you know, they add to your home run total and da 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 da. Well, the problem and the reason why they're not equivalent and why the hitter has the advantage and why traditionally, like, you can just go for the long ball and ignore pitching is because the pitching stat goes in the opposite direction. So, like, unlike the hitter, if the next batter for the pitcher hits a home run, then those ratios that are positively affected by that golden K go in the opposite direction. But if the batter strikes out in the next at bat, nothing happens. I mean, they still have credit for all of that stuff that they got from the home run, right? So the negative stat of strikeouts, I feel, brings the golden home run back down to earth a little bit. Like, I feel like in the history of fantasy, the home run is too powerful of a statistic, and it's easy to just pound the home runs and win, at least historically. And
well, so I agree with that.
By doing Ks, it means that you have real disadvantage of having Adam Dunn type players. Because you then have an additional category that goes down when somebody strikes out after they hit home run. That's my reason.
I don't really have anything. I don't really have anything to add. I don't have any love for strikeouts as a statistic, but, like, I'm not gonna contest your point, Patrick. Like, I get it. It's fine, but, you know, I understand why certain people like it. I have no love of it, but, like, I don't have anything to say to dispute what you've already said. So,
yeah, I mean, that's I totally get it. I just wish, like, so the issue I run into is that when you start to draft and you start to pick up players from the free agency, it becomes more and more difficult to find players that don't strike out. Even like not striking out, like, hey. they're not necessarily Adam Dunn players per se, but, like,
I know.
They're doing, like,
we're trying to go to sleep.
Hi, Susan.
I love you.
Hi, Susan.
Am I not muted? I thought I muted you.
No, you're being recorded live. Hi, Susan.
I thought Susan was away for the weekend.
Yeah, she's obviously not away for the weekend. She's visiting her friend Joe.
Oh, you know why? Because I muted Zencaster, but I didn't mute Discord.
How rude of you. Well, you know what? That won't come out. That actually won't come out in the recording.
So it'll just be me talking to myself.
Yeah, basically.
Say hi to Joe for me.
So the issue I have is more of, like, when you're trying to build a balanced team. Because I, like, even though I will usually start my draft and I'll play the, like, my strategy going in is, okay, it's OPS. Like, I am going to like crush hitting categories is what I'm looking for right now. Like, I will end up trying to play for all the stats, even though my strategy was to like ignore like average or something like that. I will try to still pad average as I go along. You can't pad strikeouts because everyone and their mother strikes out at least a couple of times a game or a week or something. Like, it's going to just add to your strikeout total. There's no way to say, like, oh, this guy gets negative strikeouts. He'll save me in my strikeout total here. Like, there's no way to do it. It's just like, well, I'm 20 strikeouts ahead of my opponent because I have a guy who I have to slot in as a roster because he's my third-round pick and he's going to hit 40 home runs this year. And there's nothing I could do about it.
It's just the nature of the game nowadays, and I think that's the biggest counterpoint. Is that if we're talking about fantasy from 20 years ago, then I think K's as a negative stat would be the perfect balancing act in baseball. It's just,
I agree.
Right now, the way that hitters operate, I mean, like you said, everybody strikes out, and there's not a ton of variance between high strikeout hitters and low strikeout hitters, with the outliers accepted. You know, like, obviously there's a couple guys who just go above and beyond. But I mean, you're just not getting players that are hitting 300 and 8 home runs and not striking out anymore and them staying up in the majors very long. I mean,
right.
You're hitting 280, you're striking out half the time, and you're hitting 25, 30 home runs.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. Like, there has to be like a better solution, I guess. Like, I don't know. I have to go through, I think, ESPN settings and find out what stats there are, because I would much rather have like strikeout rate or something instead. And that way, like, okay, this guy strikes out a lot, but I'm gonna grab Buster Posey. Not a good year to use him as an example, but in past years, he just didn't strike out that often. And at least he'll reel in my strikeouts, my ratio a little bit down here to try to make it so that I could fit in a Joey Gallo right here. That's what I would have preferred, as opposed to what it got. I just don't know. I have to check. ESPN has wonky settings, and I don't know if they would be able to do that.
It's actually a pretty interesting progression from what we were talking about earlier, in my opinion, because so this whole concept with these negative stats and the weight of certain categories really plays into what Ian was saying with his strategy in hitting, because like there's a reason why hitting related strategies are so popular and why they win so often, because like there's four technically if you count stolen bases, but stolen bases there's a lot of variance to that, but like there's three countable hitting stats that go up with a single event. So like you hit a home run, you get a run, you get an RBI. And so in pitching though, there's only the one. And the other counting stats in pitching are variance stats, like, oh, does he get a win? Does he get a save? So, like, there really is no equivalent, at least off the top of my head, of how you can make it so that the two sides are equal. Like, hitting will always be preferable because of the fact that a guy who hits 200 and is, by all intent and purpose, a terrible hitter can be the MVP of your team. Whereas a guy who is a terrible pitcher, there is no chance that he could be the MVP, even if he strikes out 9 guys per 9, you know?
Right. So. Right. Yeah, it's... And I think, like, you're right in what you said earlier about how, like, what was it, like 10 years ago or 20 years ago, if this was, like, fantasy then, like, I think because we had less emphasis on other ratios back then as well, but then it would have been fine. It's just like now I understand it's also like one stat out of like 6, but right. Like it does feel like it almost wants me, like encourages me to drop Joey Gallo or to drop or get rid of him, like basically like exorcist my team from these people, because if I want to do like padding or whatever, then I shouldn't have these team. That's how I feel like with this stat. Like, it actively discourages that, even though it is literally just one stat. And this is my second time getting into the playoffs. I know, small sample size, but second time in the year of doing it while punting that stat completely. So it ultimately doesn't really affect me too much on the grand scheme of things. It's just, you know, kind of pisses me off sometimes.
Why don't you just quit that league and embrace the monotheistic approach as I have, and this is the one true league, there are no others.
Ian sounds kind of drunk right now, I'm just saying.
This league is super competitive, and they play for money, and I like to show my dominance to people whenever I can.
You can't even especially show your dominance. All right, so wait. So hang
especially
on.
This year, hang where I had, I was castrated in our team, and I felt like I needed. This was my win. This is
about to say, like, you're talking about this, like it's your fucking IPA of fantasy. This league over here is so competitive, and it's locally sourced, and blah blah blah, and like, good for you.
Good for you, Richard.
You're still the bottom of the fucking barrel in our like dirty like freaking Miller Lite league over here. So why don't you get off your fucking high horse, Richard, and come over?
I'll have you know, good sir, I'm at 10th place. I'm 12. I'm 2 places above the bottom
with
of the
us
barrel.
Plebs. All right, you Natty Ice plebs.
All right, hey,
I'm
man.
Done. I've said what
this
I meant.
This is a really interesting series of events.
The,
that just happened
the league
right
voted
now.
To get rid of the rum and coke division, okay?
Oh, my God.
Like, I really am picturing Ian catching Richard peeing on the carpet or something and, like, just shoving his nose in and be like, you like it? You like to smell it?
Jesus. Bad, Richard. Bad. Pat, what do you think of
Raphael
Davis?
I'm trolling the waiver wire right now, looking for people to put in my team, and everyone is just dog shit. Oh my God.
Hey, Pat. How you liking Raphael Devers now? Number 8 on the play rater for hitters.
Nope.
Of the year.
You can have him.
314 average. You don't want that?
All yours.
29 home runs?
All yours, baby.
Man. The man's a god.
Nah, I wouldn't go that far.
Jeez, why are you still so?
Why do you
on him?
Still hate him? He makes so many.
He has improved in every measurable stat.
All he wants to do is just prove himself to you and make you love him. Why won't you love him?
Well, this is my thing with players.
What did he ever do to you?
You guys know this. I know you guys are just trolling me.
A little bit, yes, but I am.
Well, I also
I
want to know the
how.
Reason because he has improved in every measure. All
right, so I have a problem when it comes to players, and I am perfectly aware that this is unreasonable, and that it is a flaw, and that I don't make any sense when I say this. So you can just get off it because I know it. However. Like, I totally feel that a player, once they get brought up to the big leagues, their game, the initial impression that they give me and their development in their first year, 2 years or whatever, is what they are as a player. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't go and improve and completely change their approach and whatever, but that first impression always sticks with me. And to an extremely unreasonable sense. And a great example of that is Raphael Devers right now. But we don't know what Devers is going to do next year, right? Like, he might be.
This sounds like John Lester. That's who
this is
sounds.
About John Lester, okay?
It's like, always about John Lester. Jesus.
Like, I had this long diatribe about Jesus. How I thought John Lester was overrated because he got leukemia and then, or whatever. And
what?
and that was the only reason why people thought he was good, and that he was really over. Okay. Well, he's had a long, pretty good career, except for fielding ground balls, right?
Or throwing to first.
Throwing to first.
He did throw the first that one time last year.
Right. So I get it, but all of that is based upon my first impressions of him in his first couple years with the Red Sox. So I don't view John Lester as like a dominant pitcher from the Red Sox, which is really unreasonable because he was great with the Red Sox. Like, with Xander Bogaerts is a good example of that too. Like, I like Xander Bogaerts, actually. It's just, there's that year, the first year he came up, it was the playoffs. It was the year, the 2014, we won the World Series that year. And, I mean, he just looked lost. Like, he was hitting the ball, and it was going in play, but it looked like if Richard got up there, closed his eyes and swung the bat, and then, like, opened his eyes, like, oh God, like, it's going towards nowhere's land, you know? Like,
yep.
And that impression of Bogart stuck with me for forever too, like, even through this day. Like, it's why I really like Gleyber Torres, because Gleyber Torres is lighting the world on fire, even though he's not that good of a player. But I don't really like Rafael Devers or Xander Bogaerts.
This makes no sense, Patrick.
Why don't you like Bogaerts? What?
I mean, I like Bogaerts a lot better than Devers.
No, this is, and I'm about to point out why this makes no sense. Okay. Because you loved Andrew Benintendi. You were drinking the Andrew Benintendi Kool-Aid. And what is he? And look at him now.
Well, I used to like Andrew Benintendi.
But so, like, it doesn't make sense. Your philosophy of if they're not good when they come up, then they'll never be good. It doesn't make any sense.
He was good for like
a couple months. And now he's not that good. I bet you're still on his dick. I bet.
No, I'm not on his dick. But what I am on is, and it follows exactly, is that like next year, if Andrew Benintendi's on the free agency list and he has like a really good couple weeks, he's going to be on my team. Because I'm going to be like, oh, here he is. It's just taking him a while to get out the kinks. He's ready to be, you know, the next Carl Yastrzemski out there, right? Like, that's exactly how it's going to be with me and Andrew Benintendi. But, I mean, if he starts to stink, okay, whatever. But, like,
it's just, this is the most old man approach to baseball I've ever seen. Because it's just,
I won,
like,
the championship last year with this approach.
Because, like, Devers, like, all right, Richard, I'm going to ask you, because Patrick is impossible to be, like, impartial with this. I just want to just throw a couple numbers at you and see what you think. So, like, last year, Rafael Devers, his strikeout percentage was 25%.
Yeah,
right.
What do you think that? Oh, hang on, wait, that's not the correct number. Hang on, sorry, it was 24.7%. What do you think? What do you think that his strikeout rate is this year?
12%.
I'm gonna say
not that good, Jesus.
I'm going to say 15.
16. It's 16%. So you're pretty. All right. Last year, Devers was his hard hit rate. This one's not as surprising, but he's improved his hard hit rate from 34% to 37%. He's improved his line drive rate from 15% to 21%. He's walking only about. Actually, he's walking about the same.
Yeah, but he dropped the strikeout rate by 10 points.
Like, so, like, I'm looking through all these numbers on Fangraphs and trying to shows that this isn't real. Like, you know, like, oh, there's something that shows that this is like a fluke. But I don't think it is. There's no number to point to say, oh, he's going to regress. Like, every measurable stat, he's gotten better. So, and nothing, like, his home run to fly ball rate is not, it's not crazy. Like, it's not an outlier. So I don't know. What would it take? For him to win your heart, Patrick?
So, yes. And I know you may or you may not think this is unreasonable, but after you read all of that, there's really only one thing that sticks with me and makes me think that he's the same player as he always was. And if this improves, then yes, it will. It will start to change my mind. Is his walk rate like?
It's about 7%. It was about 7% last year. It's about 7% this year.
So my problem with, and if you remember, my problem with Devers is that like when Devers first came up, Alex Cora had to like bribe him with gift cards to his favorite restaurant to get him to stop swinging and missing at pitches outside of the zone. Okay,
good times.
So like, what is this telling me? So it's telling me one of two things. Either he's either pitchers are no longer pitching him outside of the zone, which seems very unlikely, okay? Or he's swinging at pitches outside of the zone, except he's hitting them, okay? And that's really not a progression in my book. That is a...
See, I don't know that that's balls. Necessarily the case.
Because but he's not walking. So what?
He's
so what
still walking, just not terribly so.
He's like, walking at the same rate he was when he was striking out 50% of the time.
He's not suddenly become Vladimir Guerrero. Like, you don't drop an 8% in your strikeout rate, like, to, and, like, because you decided, oh, I'm all of a sudden going to hit stuff at my eyeballs and in the dirt. Like, if that were the case, then, like, his other, like, his hard hit rate is up. His soft contact is only 18%. Like, I think this has more to do with the fact that his approach is a healthy approach. Because you look at guys like Harper. Harper's a perfect example because he walks more than anybody. Like, I'm pretty sure he has if not the most, like the second most walks in the majors. And his average is dog shit because he's too passive at the plate, where he'll like wait and work a count forever. And then he'll either walk. He's become a three true outcomes hitter. Like, he's,
yep.
He is walking at a 14.9% rate and he's striking out at a 26% rate. Before you chastise Devers too much because his walk rate isn't higher, like, I don't think that you want him to walk twice the rate and then bat 250, because I think that that's kind of where this like over-reliance on, this is the Billy Beane thing gone too far, where you take players and make them too passive. And that's what the Phillies did this whole freaking year until like the last month when Charlie Manuel came back and talked some sense into them, where it's like, you don't sit there and wait on pitches down the middle to work a 3-2 count to get a walk and then like have to swing at shit pitches that you have like at the end of the count when it's already too late and then end up batting 250. So that's my two cents on that.
Bryce Harper is not in the top 10 for this season.
I am shocked. This is my shocked face.
So do you know who has the highest walk rate?
Who has the highest walk rate?
Mike Trout.
Well, fine. Yes, good for you.
So, this is actually pretty good trivia.
I mean, he didn't have that. I mean, okay, so you would think, like, off the top of your head, you're like, oh, well, obviously he's the best in baseball. But he wasn't walking amazingly. I mean, he was always good at walking, but, like, it wasn't the number one walker, baseball walker. Is that a phrase? Baseball walker? Whatever.
Baseball.
The last couple of years. There was always, like, a couple of guys that were, like, doing it at, like, a much higher clip than him.
So, the good trivia here is Bryce Harper is also not even the person who has the highest walk rate on his team. So who do you think has a higher walk rate?
Who the fuck cares? Probably Real Muto or
is it Albert Pujols?
No. Please say. On the Phillies.
Oh, you said Mike Trout.
Bryce Harper.
No, on the Phillies.
Oh my god, you said.
So Bryce Harper does not have the highest walk rate on his team. The highest person with the highest walk rate on the Phillies is Rhys Hoskins.
What?
He walks 17% of the time.
Rhys Hoskins is the reason I lost my strikeout
but
category.
He's that's the perfect example, because Rhys Hoskins has been dog shit this year.
Right.
God, he's been so bad. And people kept saying, oh, don't worry, Rhys Hoskins is going to light it up at the last couple of weeks. Well, you know what? I'm out of the playoffs. Okay, so it's too late now.
Hoskins is second in baseball with 107 walks to Trout's 110. Harper is seventh with 91.
Jeez.
Right, but his walk rate's only 14.9%, which is
a lot. I was going on number of walks, not the walk rate, but whatever.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
It doesn't matter. The point has been illustrated.
Yes.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, you guys want to move out of baseball finally?
Sure.
Oh my god.
Got it.
All right, Patrick. I mean, I think the Rays have a pretty good shot.
I don't think you are allowed to say that, because you had this like super passive approach to the Red Sox this year because you've been so spoiled with championships. You're like, eh, whatever. Like, I don't really care.
Rafael Devers.
You're like, eh, we won. We've won plenty. I don't really care if we don't win this year. Whatever. Yep. And now the Yankees heard you and they're just like, oh yeah, going to totally like fucking win this title up and you're thumping this bitch.
Well, there's really only one way for me to care at all about what the Red Sox do next year, and that is if the Yankees win it this year.
I believe that.
Like, if the Dodgers finally win it, you'd be like, eh, it was their time. Like, 7 straight division titles at this point, yeah, they need it. And then next year, when the Red Sox are middle-of-the-road dog shit, you're like, oh, whatever, you know, it's okay. We've had our run. But if the Yankees win it this year, oh, man. Speaking of, I do want to talk about the Red Sox for a second.
Do you now?
Just real quick, because I know we're kind of running out of time. So the firing that happened last week. So I have a few opinions on this. First, I feel like...
Yeah, what the hell happened, by the way? Because I was really surprised that they just gave him Des Boot.
So, two things. First, I think that that he really hasn't, despite winning the championship last year, his blazing trial by fire, or not trial by fire, his like scorched earth approach to building the team, just didn't resound well with the ownership group. And I just have this really good feeling that they were looking at the books, looking at things available in the contracts and everything, and they're going to struggle to re-sign Mookie Betts, and they feel like it's his fault.
Yeah, I read a little about that, too.
Secondly, he had that disastrous press conference right before the deadline, where he's like, well, of course we're not going to do any moves at the deadline because we're out of it. Like, we don't have a chance to make a run. And the reporter was like, bro, you're like a game and a half out of the second wild card spot. And he's like, yeah, we don't have a chance. And I think that was, and like, literally, like, that's what he said in the press conference. Like, it was right before the deadline because the media was all really surprised that the Red Sox made no moves, and that they were potentially selling. And it was just like, what, really? And then I think ownership group really didn't like that either. And so that was the nail in the coffin. And
certainly didn't help.
So there you go.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. And like, I read pretty much to the effect of that recently, and I was like, okay, yeah, I guess that makes sense. So, pragmatism.
There you go.
Grumble, grumble, grumble. All
right, moving on. All right.
Yeah, all right, let's get out of baseball talk. Let's talk some video games briefly. Patrick, I'm going to start with you, I guess. I'm hearing rumblings or tells because I don't check into these things, but is there a new Destiny expansion? Or is that a game that still exists? A Destiny 2 expansion? Was it released? Announced something of the
Well,
like?
There's one coming out next month, and it coincides that's with the them one. going on Steam because they're going on Bungie. But that's
have
not
you,
what I wanted
have
to
Have you moved? Okay, sorry. You go for it. You go for it. You're our Destiny man. I have not been playing since launch.
Yeah, so Destiny is still on Battle.net right now. It's not going to move over until the new expansion comes out in October. And we've already talked about the new Destiny expansion and why I'm potentially excited about it on previous podcasts. I actually can't remember what I wanted to talk about with the show notes because I wrote it so long ago. But what I do want to talk about relating to Destiny is Borderlands 3 is coming out very soon.
Hells yeah. Was it tomorrow? The next day? What? I think it's Friday.
Something like that. So the reviews are starting to stream in.
Sort of. From what I've heard is that they limited when they released their review things for people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
September 13th. Sure, they're great.
And they also didn't even like give them the full game to review. It was like a weird like pre-release review copy thing. It was a lot of weird
stuff. There's some rustlings that Borderlands 3 is not going to dethrone Destiny 2.
Well, I'm not okay.
Really?
So
not
one,
surprised.
It's not playing the same league. Like it's not an MMO for one thing. It's still a loot shooter, but it's like what Destiny or what Borderlands has always been, which is like here's 4 players co-op up to if you want to play local or online, have at it. And
no one plays local anymore. Local is dead.
Shut up. Because all my friends have left me. It's kind of weird to think, like, oh, it's going to dethrone anything, because it's still kind of doing the same old thing that Borderlands has always done. It's, I don't know. It's, I think people who want, like, who are in on the Borderlands kind of train are already going to play this thing, no matter what, and if Destiny was scratching that itch for them until a new Borderlands came out, then now they don't have to keep playing Destiny to scratch that itch, but, like, I don't think that if people were like, oh, I didn't really like Borderlands 2 and Destiny was, like, the Halo Borderlands, then you probably wouldn't... I don't think people are going to switch over suddenly just because the third Borderlands is out.
Right. All right, that's all I want to talk about with that.
Oh, okay. I feel like I took the wind out of your sails, so I apologize.
Well, all right, so wait, like, when you say... Does that mean that it's been getting bad?
It's been in the 80s, I think, the last so far. I think only one had it like in the 60s, and that was like PC Gamer or something like that. I forget.
When it came out,
none of the Borderlands like review games have been out on the consoles. Like, nobody got console reviews. It's all PC Epic Store review titles.
I mean, I don't know. Video game reviews are also like notoriously unreliable. So,
oh yeah, sure, but still, I just found it kind of funny that like. How it's been going. It just seems like a weird mess of a thing and whatever.
Yeah.
I'm still excited for it, but I don't know if I'm gonna, like, I'm not in a position where I buy games on day one anymore unless it's like something I'm super, super excited about. And I mean, Borderlands 3 is awesome, but we'll see.
There's another big problem with this whole thing, that I wasn't planning on talking about, but I thought about earlier today. Is that I really love Destiny. I love playing Destiny. I love playing Destiny style games, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just too old for this shit. Like, and I think Ian especially, but I mean, no offense to you, Richard, but Ian especially, like, will understand what I'm saying with this. Is that, like, in order to get the most out of Destiny, and to really feel like you're progressing and doing things, you gotta play it regularly. Like, you can't be taking a
ton of time. Well, that's like any MMO, too.
Right, and so, like, but I don't have time for that. Like, I desperately want to play Destiny a lot, but, like, I mean, I got all my flight stuff, I got work stuff, I got relationship stuff, I got all sorts of bullshit. And so, I've kind of lived my way out of Destiny. It's not because I don't like Destiny, or anything like that. It's just that I can't even log in once a week or something reliably in order to do a couple things.
I think that's why I've migrated more towards like the RPGs a lot, like the single player RPGs, because like they're always exactly where you left them off.
Yeah, and exactly.
Like, especially like open world RPGs for me, because it's almost like the all of the world and options of an online multiplayer game, but it doesn't like speed off without you when you don't have the time. That's why like I really enjoyed like Horizon Zero Dawn, and I'm starting to try and play The Witcher and get into that and stuff like that. And that's just like, yay, like, you know, if I have work nonstop for a couple days, like I know it'll be exactly where I left it off. So,
yep. Yeah, and like, so for me, Octopath Traveler is definitely one.
I was about to say like Octopath Traveler is like the perfect one for that.
Yep. I've enjoyed Octopath Traveler quite a bit, even though I haven't played it in a little while. But it's just like simple things, right? Like the Spyro the Dragon collection, because I bought that the other day.
Oh, you did? Okay, you gotta tell me how it is, because I used to be a big Spyro the Dragon fan back in the day. But
so I downloaded it, but I haven't played it yet, so we'll have to talk about it next podcast. But like, Maker 2 is a good example of that too. I mean, it's not an RPG, but it's just a game that you can play for a little while and then come back to.
Oh yeah, but you know, it's weird because there are games like, so I haven't played Divinity Original Sin 2 in a really long time because I know, like, even though yes, I can, you know, I can hit save whenever and whatever and like play a little here and there. My problem is like, it's the kind of game that sucks you in, like kind of like Civ. Like there are times where like I'll sit there and I'll be like, you know, I have only like an hour before bed. I probably shouldn't play this game because if I look up, it's going to be 4 hours past what I thought it was, yep. and I'm suddenly, like, in trouble for sleep tomorrow. And I feel like there's a couple of games that do that to me, and some of the RPGs are notoriously bad at, you know, almost a one more turn kind of a feel, but with an RPG sense. And that's again, why I liked Octopath Traveler, because it felt like so, like it chopped up more. Like, the pieces were there. There are very obvious checkpoints where you're like, okay, well, I did this today. I think that's a good stopping point.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Man. I gotta get that game. I've only played, there's a demo on it, so you can play up to 3 hours.
Nice.
And then if you buy the game, you can continue off of those 3 hours. So, like, basically, it gives you the full game, and I'm sure there's speedrunners out there who can beat the game, and that'd be amazing if they could. I would love to see that. But, like, so I started out with, like, a character, and I got to the third character before my third hour struck, and it gives you the option. You're like, hey, you can save right now, pick up when you get the game, or if you want to hit a new game, you have to erase that save and start back over again. Mm-hmm. So that's where I ended up. So I have to probably end up getting that game, but yeah,
fun.
It's a nice little game. Yeah, and I'm not someone who likes random encounters usually,
right?
But there's something like so dang charming about like Octopath Traveler with like the music, the art, like the characters. I've kind of enjoyed the characters. I thought someone had said like in reviews or something on like Steam or was it? I think Octopath. No, yeah, on Steam or something like reviews. They were like, oh, the characters are just not interesting or something. Man, oh man, I started with the merchant and then I hit the scholar, and I love both those characters to death. Like they're just so cool little like weirdos. And now I'm on the first character who feels like it's going to be one of the serious types. So like the first ones are just like, I'm gonna be the best traveling merchants in the world. And this guy's like, I'm gonna find this ancient tome. And then here's this girl who's like a priest, a priestly girl or something, and her sister's going to go on a journey or some such nonsense, and their father's dying or something. It's like, whoa, this just took a turn compared to these other goofballs I've been with.
Mm-hmm.
But oh man, Ian, have you played any No Man's Sky lately? Since the new
I
update,
I have not played. I'm going to play actually tonight after we're done with the podcast, just to dip my feet back in it. So, context for anybody who doesn't know, and I'm not going to make this super long.
That's fun.
For anybody who doesn't know, apparently, No Man's Sky. This is like the second big update that they're doing. Since launch, the launch for No Man's Sky was notoriously ill-received because of promises that were made by the developer that didn't end up being in the actual game on release. And so it garnered a whole hell of a lot of negative feedback and ill will right off the bat. I kind of checked out after the first, I played it for a week, like really hardcore played it, like pretty much whenever I had the time.
You gave it a very good chance.
I gave it a really solid chance. And then I realized, oh, that's all it is. And it was probably the most disappointing game experience I've had maybe ever, because I really desperately wanted the game to be good. And then like when I realized that it wasn't, it was just devastating. And I haven't actually logged into it. I think I've logged into it once in the last like 2 years. So when I heard about this new update, I kind of like checked in the Reddit community and sort of saw like, you know, all right, what's up? What's going on? You know, where are they at? And to the credit of the developer, like, and this is why I, you know, still like games, because so Hello Games, they really, I think, recognized how they fucked up and they've made some pretty big efforts to unfuck it up. All of the expansions, like the Beyond expansion, everything, they've all been free. They've maintained a really strong dialogue with the community following the initial negative backlash. They added a lot of features that the community wanted, and even some that they didn't realize that they liked, and then they did. They have, you know, pretty good communication over social media. It's pretty much like they've, from what I understand, that it's pretty much a clinic in like what to do to rehab your game and rehab your image as a game company. And it's just like, this is exactly why everyone hates EA so much, because this is like EA would fuck something up and they'd just backtrack and just like say, well, like, you know, these gamers are entitled and everything else. And like, but Hello Games, you know, they kind of got it. Like, they got that, like, these gamers, like, they, you know, they're consuming a product, and if the product sucks, they're not under any obligation to tell you otherwise. And, you know, when you lie to your customer base, your main customer base, and mislead them, like, you're the ones that have to go and try to fix things and patch it up. It's not the other way around, where the customers should realign their expectations to you, because they can just not buy your product. So I just wanted to give a quick, like, just give that kudos to Hello Games, because they seem to have done a really good job rehabbing it. And I'm going to log back in and see what's up. And even if it still doesn't turn out to be for me, it does seem like they did it the right way. So,
yeah, man, that's super exciting. That makes, so with how Anthem is doing, and I don't know how much you've touched base on any of news of Anthem.
I didn't, because you told me it sucked.
Oh, it wasn't great. It's still apparently not great.
You told me it sucked, but, and like, so I was like, okay, I'm not even going to buy.
So, like, if you squinted your eyes, you know, like, if you were looking at a friend's really bad handwriting for notes from a classroom, if you squinted your eyes, you're like, I think I can understand what this is. That's kind of how I feel about Anthem. Like, I look at it, and I'm like, there's something here that I think I know what you guys wanted to do, but everything around it is really terrible. And so with No Man's Sky kind of making good with, like, over these years, and then also with more, like, in the past, but just as legendary, is Final Fantasy XIV, when they just basically emailed all the people who have subscribed to it and say, hey, here's, we're refunding it, the servers are going to be down for a year, we'll be back, sorry about this terrible game. And then they came back with A Realm Reborn, which is, like, 100 times better. Like, do you think, like, because you mentioned EA, how, like, do you think Anthem is there a path for Anthem to kind of make something like that happen?
The difference is that, like, because Hello Games was the vision of what's-his-face, that guy, I can't remember his name, I can never remember, like, an actual game designer. And right. So No Man's Sky was a person and his team's vision, but EA, like, all the stuff they put out is, like, corporate, you know, corporate manufactured. Like,
Sean Murray,
thank you.
Yep.
And I think that he had a vested interest in wanting it to succeed because it was his baby. Like, he loved the game. And he created something that wasn't finished and felt pressured to release it and made promises on stuff that he couldn't deliver. And that was part of the, you know, his love for it was to do those stupid things. But, like, I don't think that there's motivation on the part of any of these AAA game companies to make good on anything, because they're just going to pump out another project that they think they'll play test and, you know, and try to fit to a certain demographic to sell. And they don't give a shit about Anthem. Like, there's no vision behind Anthem. Maybe there is. Maybe there are people working on it that actually have a vision there. But you're the one who told me about Destiny, or maybe Patrick was the one, maybe both of you, who told me about that whole story about how Destiny was gutted like a year before launch because their corporate overlords hated what they were doing with it. So there were people who had a vision, but they don't have the say as to what happens to this game. It's the shareholders and the corporate stooges who at the end of the day cut the checks, and they don't give a shit, because if it's not profitable, they can either just toss it in the bin and go to some other game project they have lined up, or they can make changes not based on creative, like, decision or integrity, but just based on, like, well, like, here's something, like, Fortnite's popular, we'll add elements of that or this or that or whatever. Like, that, I don't know, you guys probably saw it. It's kind of like all over the internet now, but, like, the fans actually bought a billboard to thank Hello Games. Like, for,
did they really?
They did.
I did not see this actually.
You can actually Google it. There is a physical billboard that the fans bought to thank Hello Games for what they did with No Man's Sky. And you can't, it's inconceivable that a fan base would ever do that for EA or hell, any AAA company. So
it's not, okay, I'm looking at it. It's not, It's not a huge billboard.
No, like
it's
but like I mean, like, a, it
it's
is
like a, by a bridge.
It is a thing very that much, they did.
Yes, it is. It looks like, it honestly looks like somebody's, like, Reddit post, like, meme or emoji that they just
put onto a billboard.
Yeah. It's actually kind of adorable, but it's also kind of like the kind of low quality you expect from these kind of fans.
So, I don't know. Anyway, like, I don't know. Do you disagree? Do you agree with what I've said? Or?
No, I think that kind of is probably where the difference is, because, and especially with, like, the stuff, like, it sucks, because I mean, I think you could probably test this. I was a huge, one of the biggest BioWare fanboys that you could probably find. And, like, with all, and I always kept kind of saying, like, I would keep track of, like, the writers, like, when Drew Kapersian was on there, and, like, Casey Hudson, and all these other guys, like, I was like, okay, well, at least, no matter how weird EA gets with this, they still have these, like, top writers, and these top, like, visionaries for this company and whatnot, and... Well, they're not there anymore. They're all, like, bleeding like crazy. They just lost another writer. They just are the lead designer for the next Dragon Age. Like, it's, like... And that wasn't even a project that really has gotten off the ground. Like, the amount of, like, talent that they have lost from that studio... Like, it's not really... Like, I already said it kind of wasn't BioWare back when Mass Effect 3 ended, and the doctors had left a while ago. And I was like, okay, well, this is starting to seem like... something that was left over, and now it's just like, okay, who's still here from Knights of the Little Republic? Like, who still remains? And it's so, like, without any of those, and none of those guys had seemed to have any control left in terms of, like, okay, we need to make this a game that we want to, like, keep with our vision, and we think will be fun and engaging, and it's like, not only do they not have control, they're not even there to... like, help with that. So it's sort of... It's... Man, it just... Like, I can't... I would... If it was anyone else, any other company, I think... Well, maybe not any other company, but, like, a lot of other companies, maybe Anthem would have a path to success, but it just... Man, I wish it could be like Hello Games and No Man's Sky, and I never thought I would say that when No Man's Sky first came out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... That's the difference. It's like the courage or the conviction. Of these companies, you know, it's a byline. It's a, at the end of the day, it's just something to be written off. So if it sinks too low and they're just like, well, this isn't worth putting the effort into, because the people making the decisions are not the people who have creative investment. So, like, at the end of the day, Sean Murray, like, he's both the person who is financially but also creatively invested in the product. So he wanted it to succeed.
The hardest choices require
the strongest wills.
Richard, when you go back and edit this podcast, can you count how many times Ian has said at the end of the day?
No. I just tried to stop.
Hey, man. When I've gone through and edited it, each of us have our own, like, weird, unique tics that are just odd to hear. Because Patrick is very good about not saying ums and us, but he fills it in with, like, these weird...
Yep.
You know, like the word like sometimes, but not maybe not that word, but there are words that he will kind of like use to stall for time.
Yep.
It's interesting. and I'm sure if you read fans out there, the fan out there that's listening,
fuck me.
We'll say the same thing.
God damn it. You remember Richard, the How I Met Your Mother, the glass shattering episode?
Yes.
That's what Patrick just said to me. God damn it.
You know what's even worse is, like, listening to this, I hear the Robin Scherbatsky but-um, and I just think to myself, like, Professor, we have to drink. She said but-um.
God help us.
Oh, man. So, all right, guys. Pat, do you want to mention anything about WoW Classic, or do you want to save this for with Ben and do a whole episode on WoW Classic?
I want to do a whole episode on WoW.
Yeah, me too. I've got a lot to say, and I know you probably have even more to say. When was the last time you logged on? We'll keep this short then.
Yesterday.
Was it when we played?
A couple minutes.
Okay, cool. What level are you at?
I think I'm at level 9 now. Like, not really that far, honestly.
Okay.
Is it just original WoW?
It's yes and no. It's the before Burning Crusade, but I believe they have it set on the last patch that they put in for one of the last ones before, like, you know, the next expansion or whatever coming out. So, like, it's the most recent version of the oldest part of the game.
And oh my god, WoW got a soft reboot!
Basically.
It's amazing.
Fuck me.
Yeah. It's odd. I'm curious, like, okay, this isn't WoW Classic, but could you see other games doing something like this, Pat? I'm trying to think of other Guild Wars or something? I don't know.
The funny part about it is that most other games actually do it without you realizing. For example, you really, really loved playing Final Fantasy whatever.
Final Fantasy XIV, the non-realm, the realm unborn.
Back in the day. Well, what do they do 15 years later? They come out with the remastered version, which is the same game. It's just, like, with shinier graphics.
Oh, Skyrim just did that. Halo just did that.
Spyro did that.
Has Halo come onto the PC yet? I know that they are moving a lot of their Xbox games onto
the PC. I don't think so.
It's going to, though. I can't wait.
One day.
Wow. Although, I can't wait to play a controller on a PC game and then watch my Halo kill death rate get destroyed by mouse players.
Oh, Jesus, no.
So anyway, cool. Yeah, right, so well, everybody yeah. does it.
Yeah, you're right. I guess I didn't really think of the remasters as the same vein. Because even more, like, they could have, quote-unquote, remastered Classic, like, left all the mechanics in, but, like, prettied it up if they wanted to. But they didn't. They left bugs in there from what it was like. Like, this is as authentic of an experience of Classic as they could get. Mm-hmm. Like,
isn't that adorable?
It's so, awesome. Like... earnest. It's
awesome.
Disgustingly earnest. Oh. All right, cool. Do you guys want to quickly zoom through some movies, anime, or TVs that you have been wanting to talk about?
Sure.
Cool. All right, here's my quick one. When I was in Canada, all my streaming services stopped except for Netflix, because Canada, fun fact, does not have Hulu or Verve or any of those kind of things. Oh. So, when I was sitting at home at the end of the night and ready for getting about to go to bed for the next day, I would watch a show, and it was March Comes in Like a Lion. And it's an anime. Sorry, Patrick. It's about Shogi, which is the Japanese chess player.
Oh, yay!
And so, it's roughly chess, but they have a couple extra pieces in there that sound badass as hell.
Yeah, I've always wanted to learn how to play.
Yeah, so I think, like, if you're a chess player, you can kind of probably pop in, but and not be too confused until you just have to learn the additional rules, basically.
Right.
But it's about a guy who is really good at shogi. He's a young prodigy, quote-unquote, sort of thing, adopted into this family, and because his parents end up getting in a car accident, I believe, is how the origin story kind of starts itself out. So the first season, it's two seasons right now, and it's dubbed and subbed, so that way you don't have to read anything. You can just watch it. The art style is really, really good. It's, like, kind of weirdly hand-drawn. I dig it. It doesn't look anime. Like, I mean, it kind of does. It's like, this is a Japanese water painting kind of a look to it. But what is interesting is, like, not the shogi part, because it doesn't... It kind of sets it up to think, like, oh, this is going to be a shonen with shogi. And then it ends up being about his relationship with his adopted family, his stepbrother and sister, mostly, because they were both being groomed to be a shogi player as well. And then he comes in and kind of blows him out of the water. And his adopted father picks him as, like, the successor kind of into the shogi family tradition thing, which pisses off the sister. And there's a ton of drama with that. But the most interesting part was, and I mentioned this in our Telegram chat, but, like, in season 2, they go into bullying, and, like, obviously hot-button topic right now, and for the last couple of years, everyone loves to talk about this kind of stuff, but, like, with this show, they didn't beat around the bush a lot, they went in for an angle that, like, a lot of people don't want to talk about, because nobody likes to point fingers at certain things, they just say, like, we gotta stop bullying, we gotta stop encouraging bullying. And the show instead goes in with, like, hey, this is what happens when you guys sit on the fence and can't make a decision. because, like, it throws it into the perspective of this teacher who couldn't, quote, prove that bullying was happening, but kind of knew that it was happening. And then the parent who was like, well, it's not my child. How do you, have any proof? Basically prove a negative, which is an impossible thing to do. And at the same time, the girl who's getting bullied is putting her back against the wall kind of a thing. And you're just wondering, like, what's going to break? And it does it, it's like about an 8-episode arc, and it does it so freaking well that I love it so much. So, yeah, March comes in with a line. Highly recommend it.
I'll have to check that out. Is it on Crunchyroll?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Netflix. Fuck, I just forgot. Yep. Yeah, you said it was on Netflix. Yeah, yeah. My bad.
It's probably on Crunchyroll too, for all I know, but Netflix is where the dub and the sub is, so definitely check it out. It starts off a little slow, and then just sort of ramps up and keeps you hooked the whole time, because the characters are actually really, really good, besides just like the main character. In fact, it never actually feels like it's the main character's show, despite the fact that you're following him. It feels like he's kind of telling you a story along the way. So,
cool.
Yeah. All right. So that's mine. Pat.
Well, I haven't seen the new Quentin Tarantino movie yet. Have you?
I have not.
Did that come
either.
Out? I know
it is out. Yes.
Oh yeah, okay. It's been out for a while.
I have not seen it either because I'm bad.
I
saw Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I've heard it wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't good, but it was.
Well, okay. It's The Rock. So, like, nobody hates The Rock. And that's.
No, because he's incredibly likable. It's.
And that's basically where I ended with this show, was like, well, I got to see more of The Rock, so I'm happy.
I've been trying to watch a lot more movies with Brooke. And overall, just trying to spend a little bit more entertainment time with Brooke instead of playing video games or anything.
You guys still haven't finished Garden of Sinners, and I've got t-shirts wanting to
there you go. To you. There you go. So what Brooke's been doing is she's been allowing me to pick movies that we can watch in the evening time after dinner. And it works fine. Brooke has a fairly narrow set of things that she likes. She doesn't like really anything even remotely scary, so it kind of takes
edgy.
Up. Yeah, or edgy. So it takes out a lot of things. Well, the other day I convinced
her. She would love March Comes In with a Lion.
Probably. So the other day I convinced her to sit down and watch American Psycho with me. Have you guys seen that movie?
The
American Psycho, yes.
Yeah.
With Christian
really,
Bale?
It's a really great movie.
Yeah, so it's a great movie, and it's not really scary at all. If anything, it's kind of a funny movie. It's more funny than scary.
It's like a dark comedy.
Right. And oh my gosh, was that the biggest mistake of my life. Like, Brooke could not handle that movie at all.
Really? It's more gory than scary.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, like, she didn't mind the gore. I thought she was going to get all weirded out by the gore, but no, it's because of how creepy Christian Bale was as Patrick Bateman. Like, she just found him ridiculously creepy, and I was like,
I mean, I guess that's a testament to his performance, but
well done. And you guys may or may not
know. No, that's just Christian Bale.
No, so a couple years ago, gosh, it might actually be more than a couple, might be like 5 to 10 years ago, they did an interview with Christian Bale about American Psycho, and they was talking about the inspiration he used for the character. And apparently he was reading through the script back in the year 2000, and he was watching The Tonight Show, and he saw an interview with David Letterman and Tom Cruise. And the mannerisms of Tom Cruise during the interview is what he used as his inspiration. <for Patrick. laughs> And like,
that's awesome.
And so, I can link you guys the interview.
Oh,
it's
my god!
Hilarious, because once you see that, and then if you watch American Psycho again, you
get it. I'm never gonna be able to look at it the same way.
Because he was like, you know, Tom Cruise is telling this story that he finds really funny, and people are kind of laughing and all that, but like, you can tell that he has this huge, like, congenial smile. And there's just nothing behind his eyes. Like, there's no happiness or joy or anything. And he used
That's what you get with most Tom Cruise movies, interviews, or anything. That's kind of like.
Well, he's a psycho, like Patrick Bateman. So anyway,
yeah.
I'll send you guys the interview. It's a funny interview, just like most David Letterman interviews, but it takes an interesting turn that I'm not going to spoil, and it just like goes off the rails. It's funny.
So the other day, I have Homer Bailey on both my fantasy teams, and I looked at his picture, and I swear to God, doesn't he look like Christian Bale? Like
Homer
like
Bailey?
Homer Bailey. I posted a picture of him in Discord for you. Like he just looks like he's about to tell Alfred something about the Joker, and or he's like nodding to Fox about yeah, I'll keep that in mind. Oh man. All right. Ian, any movies, TV shows, anime?
All the anime in this season I've been kind of keeping up on for the most part. I won't go too into detail on that because Pat's here and it's more of an anime episode kind of thing.
Dude, we might have to just do a summer anime episode.
It's been a pretty full season.
There's so much stick and stuff this summer.
It's been a pretty full season and I have opinions on it, but maybe we should do one.
Feels like fall 2018 where like every day or every like there's moments in the week where I'm like, holy crap, I got like six of these that could be coming out right now.
And I believe I'm 2 weeks behind on Vinland Saga, so I need to get on that. So I'll leave anime for an anime episode. I've been watching Mindhunter on Netflix, which is good. I recommend it to people who like David Fincher or who like psychological crime procedurals or period pieces set in the 70s. Any of these things, you should watch it. Fincher is a little pretentious as a filmmaker or director, but he knows how to craft that sort of atmosphere and scene. So if you're into that, then you should definitely watch it. It's good. I've watched part of The Boys. I stopped because Susan and I were supposed to watch it together, and she's terrible, so I haven't finished it yet.
I was going to ask you guys because I have yet to jump in on the.
Yeah,
Boys,
that's a really
to limit my streaming.
It's a really entertaining. I'll say satire / parody of superhero movies in the genre. It's a bit on the nose, but it's entertaining enough. It's super cynical, but if you're into that, like, then you'd enjoy it. So a cynical takedown of superhero films, it's the right time for it because like coming off of like Endgame, that's pretty much like the pinnacle of what the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe was working towards, this sort of Golden Hill example superhero films and what they can accomplish inside the genre. And then The Boys come along and is like, but what if they're all assholes because we are all assholes as people and they would be assholes too?
So here's where I'm worried. Like, and like, does it do what the really terrible beginning premise of Tony Stark's character in Civil War?
No.
Where it
no,
was
no,
like,
no, no, no.
Oh, you couldn't save everyone in this city, so you're an asshole.
No,
and
no,
it's
no,
just
no, no.
like, excuse us for stopping the threat.
No, no, no. Let me lay this out for you. When I say asshole, I mean asshole. So, like, this isn't really a spoiler because it happens in literally 5 minutes of the show.
I've probably already heard this,
yeah.
But yes,
so,
go
like,
for
the
it.
Guy, the main character dude is just a normal dude. He has a fiance, and, you know, she's adorable. They're happy, blah, blah, blah. They're walking down the street. They're talking. And then all of a sudden, like when they're about to kiss, the fiance, a super speedster, essentially version of the Flash in this show, is running. He runs right through this girl and like liquefies her like jam. And she spatters. She's instantly killed. Like, it spatters everywhere. He stops. He's like, oh, I can't stop. I have to go. And he just jets off.
His superhero name wouldn't be Truck Coon, would it?
Oh, Jesus Christ. And like, the whole thing is, it wasn't like he was fighting criminals or whatever, right. Like, he was on his way to, he lied about where he was going. He said, oh, I was on my way to stop a bank robbery, but he wasn't. He was going, and that's like later revealed like where he was going or whatnot, but it was for his own thing. All of them are assholes. like super assholes. And like, there's no,
is there ever like one superhero who's like the only not asshole in the
show? There's a character who is like the new member of essentially what's the Justice League. And she is not an asshole. But like the question is
wide-eyed and doughy.
Yes. She's this doughy, wide-eyed, like small, she's essentially like Supergirl. And I'm pretty sure she's modeled after her. And the whole thing is like, she's introduced into this world that she's always wanted to be. And then she realizes her heroes are not these paragons of virtue that she thought that they were. And so like the challenge that challenges her worldview, and she has to make a decision about whether or not she wants to conform to that reality or whether she wants to reject it. So it's, you know, a lot of it's a little on the nose, but it's funny and it's really entertaining. And watching Carl Urban, like, do, he hams it up like really well. Like, he has this ridiculous accent. He's very funny and entertaining, and watching him be like chew up the scenery and everything is entertaining enough on its own. So I recommend it if you like superhero movies, but if you're a little cynical and you want to see, it's not Deadpool. I would say, it's as if somebody took Deadpool and Watchmen and combined them.
I was going to say, do you feel like Venture Brothers at times?
A little bit.
Because they toe the line a lot more recently, I think, with the villains and heroes.
But it's more, it's
a business.
I would say in a very broad sense, whereas I feel like Venture Brothers is a little less on the nose. It's because Venture Bros is a story that if you don't get any of the satire or anything, or the references, you can still enjoy Venture Bros as its own story. But, and you can with this too, but I believe the satire is so central to what this thing is trying to accomplish that if you don't really enjoy that part of it, you're not going to get as much out of it. And I feel like you probably would stop watching.
Maybe a better example or a better, it sounds maybe like a more like, okay, so the opposite of My Hero Academia, where
My Hero Academia is like super optimistic and everything.
Optimistic, but it like has that like, you guys aren't heroes, you're just doing it for the money thing. And it's just like, okay, well, why don't we make that the main
And that's the thing is like most like, it's really, it's true. Essentially, if you took, because like in real life, if you had like this, there's a chance they would all turn out like the Kardashians. That's kind of what are like, they're they do drugs, they sleep around, they spend money willy-nilly, and they know that there will be no consequences to their actions because like at the end of the day they're superheroes. And like,
oh, this is Booster Gold. There's a comic, Booster Gold,
Booster Gold in the like animated like Justice League, wasn't he like a decent guy though?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both, because
like most of these people are murderers.
So, okay, Booster Gold, when he first shows up in, or at least one of the times he first shows up, pick your iteration of any of these comics, but like, he basically comes in when like there's no Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman, and he makes it look like he's doing all this amazing stuff when like half the time it's his little robot companion who's making it look like he's more fabulous than he really is. And his whole like space armor thing that he wears looks like a side of a NASCAR, because he's got so many sponsor things that he's wearing now to like make him money as he goes and fights crime.
Oh my god,
it's fantastic.
So anyway, I didn't want to spend that much time on it, but yeah, like that's.
Oh man, that sounds good though. I actually thought were you the one who put the net in the notes? I thought Patrick was for a second.
No, I think it was me. So, but I,
oh, okay.
And like my little
streaming one,
because streaming has the most interesting shows. Like essentially, cable is just sports and The Bachelor. Like that's my opinion. Yeah. Like I don't.
And the sports aren't even doing well.
I don't understand why people have cable anymore. Like I have now a digital antenna in both of the main TVs in my house. Like there's no reason for me to have cable whatsoever. I don't understand.
I don't know why they keep packaging it, is my question. Like, I understand why some, like, maybe the the Midwest people might have it. Like, you know, because the internet's scary. But, like, why is it still being packaged in with, like, the internet? Like, just, like, can you just give me, like a package that's bare bones, here's the internet, and that's it? Like, that's my question about this.
I don't know.
Because you would think the trend would push this into that corner.
What was the question? I wasn't paying attention.
Why does, like, Comcast, for instance, still package cable into, like, the TV cable into their, like, packages? Like, why haven't they made, like, a internet only or internet and phone? Like, no TV at all. Here's your two things.
Well, many of them do now, like DirecTV.
Well, I go through a company called Spectrum, which is a local company here, and I just have internet, and that's it. But they want you, the thing is, they want you to buy, like, it's only a little cheaper. Like, it's like, I don't know, $20 cheaper than it would be to have, like, internet and cable, because they want you to buy into cable because it's hemorrhaging money. So,
well, yeah, and then they still can get, if they were able to get you the cable, they'd still get, I'm assuming, ad revenue somewhere in there still.
Right.
Just FYI, Spectrum is not a local company.
Oh, isn't it? Oh, well, I don't
Spectrum
know.
Spectrum is the old name, or is the new name of Charter.
Oh, well, there we go. Never mind. I'm dumb.
Still, though, like, I'm my option is Xfinity or that's it. That's all I got.
That's all I've got.
Do you guys think that, like, with how, because I don't know this, I'm about to pose this as a deep question, but, like, it doesn't have to be. With how internet streaming is going, and how kind of, like, sports have sort of just been, like, do you guys think, like how well do you think ESPN is going?
Oh,
how long, much longer
does,
yeah, how much longer do you think they have? Is, like, do you think that you could see a world where ESPN just folds and we just don't have them anymore? Or do you think, like, they're just going to keep limping along using Daddy Warbucks Disney's money to kind of keep
but
themselves.
But the thing
afloat.
Is that, like, they won't really be limping along. Disney uses leverage to get exclusivity for live sports and stuff like that, and they make a shit ton of money. Just because nobody respects them as, like, a SportsCenter highlights analysis venue anymore.
As long as they have the major sports events where they can make ad revenue, like the NBA games, Monday Night Football, you know, whatever baseball they have, Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday baseball. As long as they're making money off of those, they'll never go belly up. However, they're not nearly as profitable as they used to be because they used to make a lot of ad revenue off of SportsCenter, but no one watches SportsCenter anymore. So you've got, that's the thing now, is like they're a network that was based on sports 24/7, and most people get their sports 24/7 from the internet. So I can see a universe in the next 10 years where ESPN is entirely a streaming platform, because they're starting to lean into ESPN Plus, where you're getting content online. And I can see a scenario where, like, traditional old school ESPN as the cable network just goes away, and it just becomes Disney rolls it into ESPN Plus, and that's where they stream all of their exclusive events, and that becomes ESPN.
So here's the thing. Like, what live sports are you actually able to watch on ESPN or ESPN Plus? Because quick search of it makes it look like what you've got is college sports, international matches, esports, and then it kind of gets murky.
Well, I'm pretty sure that you can you can do ESPN Plus. If you subscribe, you can watch whatever their national ESPN sports broadcasts are, I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. Like, you can subscribe to that.
Because it seems like they were, like, whenever, quick scanning of it, when I had...
The things you just mentioned are in addition to.
Right.
So that's like, oh, if you get ESPN Plus, you get these sports things that are on the main network, but they're on Plus.
Well, that's the thing. So, like, the main network always seemed like it was inconsistent to me in terms of, like, well, you know, sometimes they'll get a baseball match or
football,
but it seemed like TBS and Fox got the other ones.
They get, but the last time I had cable, ESPN would broadcast baseball games on Sunday night, Monday night, and Wednesday. Those were the nights. And then they have Monday Night Football, and they'd have, like, you know, whatever basketball games they decided to do whenever. I don't know. There was probably a day, but I can't remember.
The I think the glaring thing here, Richard, is that, like, just because you don't really care about college football, like,
well, yeah,
college football a huge industry. Is their huge thing.
It's probably true. Behind Monday Night Football. It's got to be like their second biggest revenue stream, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I believe that. I believe that. I guess my disbelief, or not disbelief, but like somewhere slightly less than that, of is college, is that enough to carry it along? I guess if that's the only place.
Remember
to
when
it,
they let go of that talent? That's half the reason they did it, was because their online. That was what they viewed as expendable to boost their profit margins, is because they're hemorrhaging money. So they're like, well, what do people watch? Like, no one watches SportsCenter anymore. No one gives a shit about our journalism because there are other places that do it better. It's like, so let's lean all the way into the talking head shit. And it's the same thing that CNN has done.
Yeah, I'm actually about to say that. So
it's,
change question.
It's literally Fox News, CNN, ESPN, they've all done it because they realize that the people who care about cerebral writing and journalism have gotten that from other sources. So they're like, well, rather than pay big paychecks to these people, you know, these actual talented people, we'll pay one big paycheck to Stephen A. Smith and just have him rant for 3 hours or whatever.
God. Of all the people to just give one paycheck to. God, I can't stand that guy.
Yeah, I know. But there are plenty of people.
And his pouty face.
But you realize that there are plenty of like mouth breathers who do love him and they watch him. Like, it's the same crowd that watches The Bachelor, and it's the same crowd that, like, watches, you know, The Voice and stuff. Like, the people who
got the same effect as a static noise machine for you, okay?
But, like, that's the thing. And, like, they made that decision as a company that was what they wanted to do in order to try to keep profitability or viability on the network.
So here's I'll edit this question then. Do you see a day when ESPN is nothing but just live sports?
Yeah.
Like, they just cut Stephen Smith.
You're already seeing it. Yeah, pretty much. Because, like, a lot of people just, like, watch clips of him online anyway.
Right.
So
that's the world I want to live in, is ESPN just gives up entirely and then just goes right into live sports. And
I think we're almost there. Remember, like, most of any of their good content now is hidden behind the ESPN paywall. Like, yeah, it's true. Been that way for a while now too. Like, you can't read any of the few good journalists that they have left. You can't read them. It's gotten,
it's
have just, you seen it's the, just the keep progression?
Law. It's just Keith Law.
Remember when we used to be able to read Keith Law's prospect reports, and we can't anymore. Yep.
Oh, I can, because I still stupidly subscribe because I love Keith Law enough to make
yeah,
me
Yeah, good
do
for
it.
You. Like, yeah. I like going over to CBS Sports and read their shit, because it's almost good.
FanGraphs is really, really good. They've actually stepped it up a lot in the recent years.
Yeah, because they know that they have the market cornered.
Yes, they do.
The cultured sports fan right now watches their live sports on ESPN and gets their analysis from The Athletic.
Yeah, The Athletic is really good. CBS Sports.
Doesn't The Athletic require a subscription, though?
Yes. Yep. Athletic does. Okay. CBS Sports, to their credit, they still do a good job. You know, RotoWire, FanGraphs, they all have good people, so.
Yeah. Well, RotoWire was, I don't know if I've read articles on RotoWire, but they're always the ones
they
who
have
do
a podcast
the, like,
that's not
snip.
Bad.
Oh, really? All right.
So.
They're the ones who do the snippets for, like, the fantasy that ESPN sponges off of for baseball players, too. So, cool.
But we are hurtling towards a streaming-only a la carte society, and I cannot wait for that to happen, like, full. It's already pretty much happened, but...
Yes and no, because, so, at a certain point, you can't all, like, everyone out there, like, Disney, I'm talking to you, Disney, I'm talking to you, Netflix, I'm talking to you, you can't all have streaming services, okay?
And will.
Because I will eventually stop buying these, and I actually already have. Like, I'm not going to buy Sony's shit that they have with, like, the ones they got out there. I'm not buying, probably not, if I'm doing Disney Plus, it's whatever my normal Hulu subscription carries over into. I'm not gonna upgrade. I can't keep, like, at a certain point, I cut the cord because it's to save money for these other services. if I keep buying these things, I'm back to where I was before.
Right, but this is why you, like, you know, this is where the sponging off my mother and, like, using her Netflix account. So that's something I don't have to pay for. So,
okay, she well, like we can't Netflix all family. Sponge off of people. Right now, my parents are sponging off of my Netflix account.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, I sponge off of her Netflix account and Hulu. And then she, in return, sponges off of our HBO Go and soon to be our Disney Plus. So,
oh, that's but, a nice
I
system,
mean, I like it better this way, though, because the idea here is that, like, Richard's right. But on the flip side of that, like CBS All Access, for example, if I, like, I, 10 years ago, I would have to get a cable subscription and get CBS, blah, 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 in order to watch Star Trek Discovery. Okay. And myself and my family are totally in the demographic of people who would pay every single month for one fucking TV channel. Just so that we could watch one show that's on in the fall, right?
It's a very Patrick Weaver kind of a situation right. here.
But now I don't have to do that. Like I subscribe to CBS All Access whenever the new season comes out, and then I unsubscribe when it's done.
Like that's the thing, so, yeah. Like, and everyone who unsubscribed from HBO like after Game of Thrones ended. So
right, so I don't.
And
I don't really
benefit out. I watched Chernobyl.
No, I mean, like, it gives the consumer so... That's the thing, is, like, the cable monopoly was so inflexible, whereas now all we have is flexibility.
Right.
True.
I can unsubscribe to all of these streaming services any day if I wanted to. And, like, yep. that's a, and like I can subscribe to start any, all up. Of them, none of yeah. them, and, you know, start or stop as I see fit. And, like, frick, like, considering that I share them with so many different people, it's, like, it's great. I love it. The choice. But it's perfect. It's in a really good sweet spot right now because you have multiple platforms that offer multiple quality options, but it's not monopolized. Like, Disney doesn't own all streaming services because then we'd be right back where we started. So you want Netflix and Amazon and Hulu to be coming up with good quality options that a lot of people like, because the day that two or three of these stop putting out. Like, I was happy as a clam when Amazon got the rights to Lord of the Rings and not Netflix, because Netflix is big Same. Enough. You want the competition so that we don't fall back in the cable monopoly.
Well, yeah, and to a lesser degree, like, Netflix gets Friends, but Hulu has Seinfeld. And
exactly,
like,
right.
Yeah, it starts to really, yeah, it spreads it out a little bit, and I do appreciate that. Don't get me wrong, I am more in the camp of, I am liking this world a hell of a lot better than the cable one. My only issue is I just don't want everyone to think that they have a special Snowflake streaming service, and, like, here, if you want TNT, you got to get this streaming service. If you want this one, you got to get this one. This one.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm surprised CBS is still going. To be honest,
yeah, I know, right? Like I like it better when they fold into an omnibus sort of a service, and then there's like four or five of them, and I just like shotgun myself out to these
eventually.
Five, these core,
eventually,
and then I'm
once
happy.
The market settles, that's where we're going to be. It's the Wild West right now because this is still new, but. A couple years from now, that's pretty much where we're going to be.
Well, that's why, okay, not to keep pushing this one, but, like, that's why I like Verve so much, because it's so goddamn weird, because it's basically, like, if, like, any one of the things in there, and, hell, it has Crunchyroll, but, like, these are all tiny little streaming sites things that probably wouldn't have lasted, but they're all, like, banded together sort of a thing into this one really weird niche streaming site, and I like little things like that, because it's like, okay, you've got a lot of oddball stuff here that on their own probably would never have seen the light of day unless, like, they were lucky enough to get, like, picked up by Netflix or something. But, like, it's cool to sort of see this, like, coalition, for lack of a better word, here as well. It's just another tool in the belt to go for if I'm looking for a show.
Like, you guys are kind of ignoring the whole idea that in the media world, in the entertainment world, it's really only a couple companies. Like, CBS All Access is not folded.
Oh, yeah,
it
yeah.
It will never,
like,
go away,
like,
because CBS is its own company. Like, CBS is right. Viacom. Like, the reason why you have
Viacom owns a whole shit ton of stuff.
Like, well, but it, in the media world, it's fairly independent from all these other ones. So like the Disney Empire, I mean, you don't really want just like one overarching one, or even just a couple of overarching ones. You want as many of these little ones as possible.
Yeah, but the really tiny ones are not going to last. That's the thing.
Right. But like, here's the thing. So like,
media producers anymore.
Well, no, but some of the streaming ones are like small. I guess I'm not phrasing this correctly. Like, some of these smaller streaming services, while they are usually owned by larger companies, the streaming services typically, if they're not profitable, they don't last because they're just thrown away by what is essentially corporate overseers that write it off as like not profitable and close down that particular division of whatever company they're in. So I don't know. It's still, at the end of the day, like, it still needs to be profitable.
Ding.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, even my example of TNT, like,
fuck.
Yeah. Even my example of TNT was kind of stupid because, like, it's owned by Time Warner Cable, which is, like, a giant conglomerate which owns a bunch of things. So it would never be, like, a TNT channel, like, streaming site. It'd be a Time Warner Cable or Time Warner, like, here's all of our sort of things that we own thing instead. So, like, it will always be sort of an omnibus. But anyway, yeah.
Cool. Yay, streaming. Yeah. Sweet. Death to cable.
Yay! Death. No, wait. Alright, cool. Guys, have anything else? We've pushed Patrick's time limit pretty darn far, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I'm good.
Awesome. Alright, so then our next one, Pat, you and I will do a WoW Classic exclusive podcast with Ben.
That sounds like fun.
Ian, you and I can do a summer anime one, because
it'll be wrapping up by then. Summer. We should probably start looking to do these quarterly, to be honest.
Yeah, because the other one was so long, I ended up having to split them up anyway, so I think it would be more flexibility for us if we were able to just do quarterly.
I'd say we do quarterly and then do like the one like anime of the year kind of episode.
Yes,
where we just
a wrap up,
because that'll make the recaps easier too, because we don't have to go like so deep into each show.
And then I don't know if we're going to do the same thing as we did last year, where we also did a, hey, let's talk about how much Crunchyroll dropped the ball for their award ceremony again.
No, I think we'll just do what we think should win. I think probably.
I think so too. Yeah. That'll make it easier. So, all right, cool. Yeah. All right, guys, let me wrap us down a little bit. Close us down. Wrap up.
Jesus Christ.
Let's combine the two phrases. So, alright guys, this has been our show. If you have any questions, qualms, concerns, things you'd like to discuss, you can email us at leagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org. There's also a podcast. This is the podcast. There's also a Twitter account. It's @VLOMGpodcast. There's a Discord link in the description below where you can join the OTN sort of community that we have there. It's full of all sorts of esports goodness and video game nuggets and things. There are Twitch streams every Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 p.m. ish. Mine is like 8:30. Mine's more closer to 8:30. Monday is a Level Up podcast with John Joey. However, I am not going to be streaming at all this month. I am trying to cut back on distractions as I continue to try to convince myself that I can write. There is also a Patreon if you would like to donate to help us become potentially better. It's at patreon.com/OTN. And yeah, guys, thank you so much for taking time out. And hopefully we'll be able to do another show way sooner than 2 months.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I'll let you all go. And everyone else, you all have a good night and stay at least mediocre level.